Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
It's time for our latest installment of Unearthed. If you're new to the show, this is when, four times a year now, we look at things that have been literally or figuratively unearthed over the last 3 months. Even though this episode is coming out at the start of November, the period of time that it is covering is July, August, September. We're surprisingly several episodes ahead at this point, which does not happen that often on our show. So today's episode, we're going to talk about some updates that have happened over the last few months, some oldest things, books and letters. We have a late entry into our Halloween stuff because this was originally going to come out in October, but as planned when we're recording, it's actually going to be November. And then in our second part of this two-parter, we'll have some other things, including repatriations and artwork. We've got some edible and potable food and beverage stuff, which is always a favorite of mine. A few other things also.
Here is my take on late Halloween entries. Every day is Halloween if you want it to be. Someone asked me recently when Halloween season starts for me, and I was like, November 1st. Because it never ends. So we are, as Tracy said, starting with some updates, including updates to previous installments of Unearthed. Last time on Unearthed, we talked about a copy of Shakespeare's first folio that was going up for auction. This was one of only about 220 known copies of the first folio that have survived until today. Most of those are in museums, so they don't come up for auction very often. That auction took place in July at Sotheby's in New York City. And that first folio sold for almost $2.5 million.
We have also had several updates on Unearthed about work at Colonial Williamsburg's First Baptist Church, which was one of the earliest Black church congregations in the United States. Exhumations have started there at the former site of the church in July. That followed the approval of the First Baptist Church descendant community. In addition to the exhumations themselves, there are plans for osteological and DNA analysis of the remains that they are exhuming. So in addition to providing more information about who these people were, this research will hopefully allow surviving descendants of these people to make decisions about what their final resting place should be.
Back in one of our 2018 installments of Unearthed, we talked about research into how dice have evolved over history, which noted that Roman dice tended to be visibly irregular. At other points, we've also talked about how irregularly shaped dice in history may have been used to cheat at games, because that irregular shape affects the probability of certain numbers being rolled. Another idea is that Romans didn't care about that, either because they didn't thoroughly understand probability or because they credited luck at dice as coming from the gods. But research published in the journal Archaeological and Anthropological Sciences comes to a different conclusion, that Roman dice are asymmetrical because it's easier to fit 6 pips on a bigger face.
This whole study is delightful to me. To do this research, they, quote, conducted an experiment with naive die producers to see how they configure pips on blank cubes with different degrees of asymmetry. In other words, they gave asymmetrical dice to 23 volunteer psychology majors and asked them to mark 8 dice apiece. 12 of the students were specifically asked to mark the dice so that the number of dots on the 2 opposing faces added up to 7. Most of the time, they marked one of the biggest faces on those dice with 6 dots. And for dice that were intentionally marked to have 1 and 6 on opposite sides, nearly 90% of those folks did put the 6 on one of the 2 bigger sides of that asymmetrical dice.
Makes sense. Some of the students said they marked their dice this way because they started with the 1 and put that on the largest side. But either way, among this group of students, there was a clear preference for putting the 1 and the 6 on the largest sides.
Moving on to updates of actual past episodes rather than installments of Unearthed. On April 30th of 2018, we did an episode about the archaeological site known as Mohenjo-Daro, which was one of the most important cities of the Indus Valley civilization. That city was built around 2500 BCE, and it was named a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 1980. This site suffered significant damage in the extreme flooding that struck Pakistan in August. That region saw about 1,400 millimeters or 55 inches of rain during that month. And this is the most rainfall that has been reported in the area in this century since these ruins were rediscovered.
Often when we talk about this kind of climate damage, the issue is flooding. But the drainage systems in and around Mohenjo-Daro still function, and there was far less standing water there than at other areas that were affected by the same weather events. Instead, the issue here is that the rain washed away sediments and outer coverings that were protecting the ruins. Repair work is ongoing, and UNESCO is assisting with the effort.
We mentioned this next one in a listener mail segment, but today, for a little more detail, Jim Thorpe, who we covered on the show over the course of 3 episodes in November of 2020, was stripped of his Olympic medals over claims that he was not really an amateur athlete. That's something that we talked about in those episodes. On the 110th anniversary of Thorpe's gold medal win in the decathlon, the International Olympic Committee announced that his record was being restored. So now he is recognized as the sole gold medal winner of both the decathlon and the pentathlon. The organization Bright Path Strong was heavily involved in advocacy for this. The family of Hugo K. Weislander, who had been named gold medalist in the decathlon when Thorpe was stripped of his medals, was also involved in this advocacy. They confirmed that Weislander had never considered himself to be the legitimate gold medalist.
The National Galleries of Scotland announced the discovery of a self-portrait by Vincent van Gogh behind one of van Gogh's other paintings. That other painting is Head of a Peasant Woman, and it was discovered during an X-ray in preparation for an exhibition. This find is not entirely surprising. As our episode on Van Gogh discusses, he often flipped his canvases over to paint on the other side to save money. We most recently aired our past episode on Van Gogh as a Saturday classic on June 18th of this year.
Next up, we talked about the lynching of Emmett Till in our 2017 episode, The Motherhood of Mamie Till Mobley. We also have a more recent episode where we've talked about that a bit more. In recent installments of Unearthed, we have talked about efforts to bring charges against Carolyn Bryant Donham, likely the last surviving person who was connected to the killing. Donham, who was then known just as Carolyn Bryant, alleged that Emmett had physically grabbed her in a store in Money, Mississippi, and then at trial, she testified that he had grabbed and threatened her. In 2017, author Timothy Tyson published a book titled The Blood of Emmett Till, in which he quoted Donham as saying that her testimony in court was not true.
Most recently, we talked about the discovery of an unserved warrant for Donham's arrest and hopes that it might lead to legal action. In August, a LaFleur County, Mississippi grand jury ruled that there was insufficient evidence to bring charges against Donham for either kidnapping or manslaughter. Surviving family members of Emmett Till described this as disappointing but unsurprising.
When we did an episode about sculptor Edmonia Lewis on the show, we talked about her time at Oberlin College. Lewis wasn't allowed to register for her final term there. She had to leave Oberlin in 1863 before being able to graduate. She had faced a series of accusations and rumors, including an allegation that she had poisoned her roommates. She was actually acquitted of that. As we talked about in those episodes, Lewis was one of only a very few people of color enrolled at Oberlin. She had both Black and Indigenous ancestry, and she was harassed by other students because of her race.
At its 2022 commencement, Oberlin awarded Edmonia Lewis with her degree. That was not an honorary degree. It was the degree she would have earned had she been allowed to complete her studies.
Bobby Reno, who had advocated for the late Edmonia Lewis to be awarded her degree, spoke at commencement and read a quote that is attributed to Edmonia Lewis, quote, "Sometimes the times were dark and the outlook was lonesome, but where there is a will, there is a way. I pitched in and dug at my work, and now I am what I am. It was hard work, though, but with color and sex against me, I have achieved success. That is what I tell my people whenever I meet them, that they must not be discouraged, but work ahead until the world is found to respect them for what they may have accomplished."
Our episode on Edmonia Lewis was most recently a Saturday Classic on February 26, 2022.
Moving on, in March of 2016, we did an episode about Denmark's early royalty and the Yelling Stones. And one of the early royals that we talked about was King Harald Gormson, also known as Bluetooth. At least one chronicle describes Bluetooth's burial place as Roskilde, Denmark. Two recent publications suggest he may really have been buried in Wajakowo in what's now northwest Poland.
Now, these publications don't agree on where in Wajakowo, though. According to Marek Krida, satellite imagery of a Roman Catholic church that was built in the 19th century suggests there's a Viking burial mound underneath. But Swedish archaeologist Sven Rosborn argues that Bluetooth had converted to Christianity by the time of his death, so he would have been buried somewhere that was already in use as a Christian burial site.
In our year-end Unearthed for 2021, we talked about a canoe that had been found in Lake Mendota in Wisconsin. The person who spotted it originally thought it was just a log. It turned out to be a canoe that was about 1,200 years old. Another even older canoe was found nearby in September. Although this is in pieces now, it was carved from a single piece of white oak about 3,000 years ago. Members of the Ho-Chunk Nation and the Bad River Tribe were both present for the canoe's retrieval. The Wisconsin Historical Society and tribal members are caring for both of these canoes until they can be conserved. If you're wondering why I didn't have this up with the other updates of previous episodes of Unearthed, the answer is I forgot to move it.
And lastly, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts has formally exonerated Elizabeth Johnson Jr., the last person convicted during the Salem witch trials, whose name had not yet been cleared. Johnson was one of 11 people who were convicted of witchcraft, but not ultimately executed. She had been sentenced to death herself, but was then reprieved. Johnson was one of a small group of people convicted under a reformed court in 1693, and most of the others were pardoned or had their names cleared in the 17th century. Johnson did not, though, even after applying for restitution in 1712. Johnson's exoneration was part of a budget package that was passed in July. Prior hosts of the show talked about the Salem witch trials in June of 2008 and October of 2012.
That was the last of our updates, so now we can take a real quick sponsor break.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Next up, we have just a few things that are the oldest, or at least they're a lot older than we previously understood. First up, Zanzibar's Stone Town is a coastal trading town made primarily from mangrove timber and coralline ragstone, and it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It was previously believed to have been built by Omani Arabs in the 18th century, and a lot of its surviving buildings do date back to that period, but an international team has found evidence that this area was originally settled hundreds of years before that, all the way back in the 11th century. This means that the town's origins trace back to local Swahili people. Researchers have found evidence of homes, cooking sites, and a lot of pottery, both locally made pottery and pottery that had been imported from Asia.
A find in Borneo has pushed back the timeline for the oldest known successful surgical amputation by roughly 20,000 years, thanks to bones that are about 31,000 years old. According to research published in the journal Nature, skeletal remains discovered in 2020 show evidence of an intentional amputation of a person's lower left leg. Researchers concluded that this was an intentional surgical amputation, not a congenital limb difference or the result of something like an animal attack, based on a lack of fractures and evidence of healing in the bone.
This person was probably a child when the amputation was conducted, and in addition to surviving the surgery itself, they seem to have lived for another 6 to 9 years. They were part of a hunter-gatherer culture that lived in mountainous rainforests. So this suggests that in addition to having enough medical knowledge to conduct a successful amputation, this was a community that had a strong sense of social or family ties to provide support for somebody whose mobility would have made survival in this kind of environment more of a challenge.
This person's remains were found in a cave adorned with rock art that dates back roughly 40,000 years. And as they were working, archaeologists nicknamed the find Scully.
And our last oldest thing. An archaeological dig in Cardiff, Wales has unearthed what may be the city's earliest house. Archaeologists initially believe that this structure might have been built sometime between the late Iron Age and the early Roman period, which is a window of time that is really not well documented in the currently known archaeological record. But a clay pot at the site suggests that this structure, known as the Trelai enclosure, is really a lot older, dating back to the Bronze Age between 1500 and 1100 BCE. At this point, there are only a couple of settlements that old that have been documented in Wales.
And now it is time to move on to books and letters. An interdisciplinary team of researchers is trying to find out whether Johannes Gutenberg was aware of movable type printing presses that had already been developed in Eastern Asia centuries before he started working on a press of his own. To do this, they are using X-ray fluorescence to study texts that were printed in Korea and ones that were printed in Europe, including parts of a Gutenberg Bible and a first edition copy of the Canterbury Tales.
One of the things that's interesting about this work is that the researchers involved with it aren't completely sure what they're looking for or whether this work is going to lead them to an answer. What they're essentially doing is analyzing every inch of these texts and creating maps of all the elements that are present, whether they are from the ink or the page or, say, something that somebody spilled on there hundreds of years ago.
It's well established at this point that movable type existed in Eastern Asia long before Gutenberg was born. The earliest named person credited with developing movable type is Bi Shung, sometime around the year 1040 during the era of the Northern Song Dynasty. But we don't really know whether Gutenberg knew about these earlier presses in China and Korea or whether he developed his press independently. Regardless, the influence of Gutenberg's press in Europe was different from these earlier presses in Asia. Overall, in Europe, movable type printing presses led to the mass production of materials that became widely available to the general public, while in Asia, many presses printed work only for the upper classes.
Next up, a man shopping at an estate sale in Maine in September bought a page from a medieval manuscript. He paid $75 for this. It was labeled as an illuminated manuscript on vellum dating to the year 1285, but when he took a picture of it and sent it to one of his old professors, with some help, they ultimately figured out that it was a page from a Catholic prayer book called the Beauvais Missal.
This book previously belonged to William Randolph Hearst. I feel like he's like the recurring character of our show.
Kind of sometimes, yeah.
Hearst sold this book in the 1940s, and art dealers took it apart and sold pages individually. That was something that was really common at the time. The page has been valued at between $5,000 and $10,000. By coincidence, Lisa Fagan Davis, who helped identify the photo of the page, has been trying to reunite all of the pages of the book, and so far has tracked down more than 100 of the roughly 300 pages it originally contained.
And for our last thing under books and letters, a team in Istanbul has found a 1600-year-old writing set. The set includes a dip pen made of bone, an inkwell that still has traces of red and black ink, and a small dish. This was found at an archaeological site west of Istanbul and dates back to the Imperial Roman period. According to news coverage about this find, this is the first time an intact writing set has been found dating back to this era. It was a time when literacy would not have been particularly common.
Next up, we have several finds related to tombs and burials. First, researchers in Argentinian Patagonia have found an example of a woman who was buried in a ceremonial canoe, which dates back about 1,000 years. There's been some debate about this practice and whether it was performed before Spanish colonization of South America, with some researchers arguing that the Spanish introduced these canoes to the indigenous people of the area. But this research reaffirms ethnographic work and oral history suggesting that this practice was carried out for centuries before the Spanish arrived.
In spite of that centuries-long history, this is the first physical evidence of a pre-Hispanic canoe burial in this particular era. The practice was likely widespread, and it carried symbolic and religious meaning, but it's challenging to find concrete evidence of it because these are wooden canoes, and in this kind of environment, they would rot apart really quickly. The local Mapuche people continue to make and use these kind of canoes, and this research was carried out with the consent of the Mapuche Curuhuinca community.
Archaeologists studying what they believe to be a woman's burial site in Germany have found an animal bone, some jewelry, a spindle whorl, a glass bead, and a medieval folding chair. The chair is made of iron, one of only two such chairs ever found in Germany, and about 30 ever found in Europe. Of those 30 total chairs, only 6 of them are made of iron. This one was buried at the person's feet, and it's possible that this chair was meant as a marker of both social status and some kind of political office.
I really like this one because folding chairs just seem like a more modern than that invention.
Maybe she was a medieval tailgater.
Last October, archaeologists in Tusenenhausen, Germany, found the burial chamber of a child dating back about 1,300 years. This is a stone burial chamber. It was in really good condition because a lot of times in these kinds of finds, water and sediment have penetrated into the chamber over time and then gradually filled it up with, you know, soil and sediment. That protects what's inside. And when that happens, researchers can sometimes cut out the whole block of soil and transport all of it back into a lab where it can be studied and conserved. That was not possible in this case, since nothing had ever filled up the burial site in that way.
So the team carefully filled the chamber with water to stabilize everything in it, flash froze it in nitrogen, and removed that. This is so cool. The block was kept frozen in storage for several months before being thawed out earlier this year. This involved a specially prepared room with temperature and humidity controls, heat guns and soldering irons, and suction devices to remove moisture and condensation. The thawing started in June and was expected to take several days.
So the results of this study after the thawing remain to be seen. But some things that we already know include that this child, who was nicknamed the Ice Prince, was probably around 10 years old and was buried with a dog, a sword, a weapon belt, and silver bracelets. There were also gold crosses and a bronze bowl in the burial chamber.
In July, an archaeological work started at a site in England known as Arthur's Stone, and it ran for about 4 weeks. Although King Arthur may have been a legendary figure rather than a real historical monarch, the site has been associated with him since the 13th century. According to legend, King Arthur killed a giant there whose elbow left an impression in one of the stones. It is also the inspiration for the stone table in C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Details of this excavation haven't been released yet as of when we're recording this, which again is October the 4th. So we don't have all the details yet, but this site is home to a Neolithic tomb dating back about 5,000 years that has not been excavated before this point. Based on this and earlier work, archaeologists already believe that Arthur's Stone is connected to at least two other sites in the area. This dig was also open to the public, and thousands of visitors from around the UK and elsewhere came to have a look at it.
Also, just a mile south of this site, another team has found evidence of prehistoric use of transparent rock crystals to mark burial sites. These crystals had been shaped by knapping, the same technique used to shape flint into projectile points, and deposited at burial sites for as long as 300 years.
And lastly, before we take a break, research published in the journal Medieval Archaeology in June examines the practice of bed burials in early medieval Europe. Just like it sounds, these were burials in which the person was buried in a bed, usually a wooden bed, and there are examples of this from the 5th through the 10th centuries scattered all around most of Europe, including Britain.
This research examined 72 possible or definite bed burials, and they found that while the specifics of these burials varied from place to place and through the centuries, the ones in England were overall different from the rest. In England, the first bed burials appeared in the 7th century, and the known English bed burials involve women's graves. So, this research concluded that in England, bed burials were introduced from elsewhere in Europe, possibly brought to England by women who traveled there for religious reasons.
We're going to take another quick sponsor break before we have some belated Halloween stuff.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Okay, so as I alluded to earlier, originally this episode was going to come out in October, and so I had made this selection of Halloween-y type stuff, things related to the sorts of episodes we might spend more time talking about in October. And we had some schedule shuffling. This got pushed into November, but I had already come up with all this Halloween stuff, so I'm sticking to it.
Why would you not? I don't understand this Halloween limitation thing.
First, the embalmed heart of Dom Pedro I, first emperor of Brazil, arrived in Brazil from Portugal in August. This was part of the commemoration of the 200th anniversary of Brazil's independence. This heart is preserved in a jar of formaldehyde, and it was returned back to Portugal after the independence commemorations were over. I don't know that we would have a whole episodes about preserved monarchs' hearts in jars, but boy, did it feel Halloween-y to me.
There are lots of good preserved hearts in history. One of the big headlines over the last few months has been the reported identification of the Somerton Man. That is the name people use for a body found on Somerton Beach in Adelaide, Australia on December 1st, 1948. This history mystery is also known as the Tamman Shud case because the contents of this person's pockets included a rolled up piece of paper with the words Tamman Shud written on it. That is a Persian phrase meaning the end or finished, and it is also the last two words of the 11th century Persian poem known as the Rubaiyat. This later turned out to have been torn from a copy of the book that had what looked like a code written inside. So people started to wonder if this unidentified person had been a spy.
It's something that we've gotten a lot of requests to talk about on the show. And I think at various points have considered it and not done it for various reasons. According to Derek Abbott from the University of Adelaide and American genealogist Colleen Fitzpatrick, this body belonged to Carl Webb, known as Charles, who was born in Melbourne in 1905. They had previously built an extensive family tree for Webb as they were trying to solve this mystery. They compared DNA from strands of hair that had been caught in a death mask made of these remains back in the 1940s to DNA from a living relative who had been documented on this family tree.
There are still some unanswered questions, though. There are no known photographs of Charles Webb to compare to photos of the remains, and officials in Australia have not yet confirmed these reported results.
If this is Webb, there may be some straightforward explanations for some of the things that have always been interpreted as particularly mysterious about the Somerton Man. Like, there have always been questions about why was this person in Adelaide in the first place? Charles Webb, it turns out, had left his wife the year before. So he may have just been trying to get away. He also liked poetry, and he liked betting on horses. So it's possible that that copy of the Rubaiyat was just something that he had because he liked it, and that the handwritten code inside was something about horse races, not a wartime spy code, as has long been theorized.
Examination of the grave goods that were included in 177 burials on an island in Lake Onega, Russia, has found that a striking number of bone and tooth pendants in these graves were made of human bones. These pendants were previously thought to have been made from the teeth or bones of other animals. While most of the rest of the pendants came from elk or some type of cattle, nearly a third of them were from humans.
And lastly, researchers from Nicholas Copernicus University in Turin have documented a gravesite in Poland that shows evidence of anti-vampire burial practices. This grave is that of a young woman who was buried with a triangular padlock around her left big toe and a sickle pinning her neck to the ground. There were also greenish spots on the palate of her mouth, suggesting that something made of copper might have been put in there, maybe a coin.
Although media reports quickly framed this as a vampire burial, researchers involved with the discovery stressed that this was likely the grave of a woman who was being distrusted or mistreated by her community. She may have had a physical or mental disability or an illness that caused her neighbors to believe that they needed to take precautions to keep her from rising from the dead. One of her upper teeth protrudes in front of the others, so her facial appearance may have been a factor. They don't believe she was executed, though. Apart from the padlock and the sickle, she seems to have been nicely dressed, with a pillow under her head and a bonnet covering her hair.
This grave dates back to the 17th century, so various headlines describing this as medieval are not correct.
Whoops!
Yeah. and that was on my little Halloween collection.
I love it. All Halloween collection all the time. Let's get more spooky things in our unearth. Do you have listener mail, be it Halloweeny or no?
I do. This is from Beth. And Beth wrote, "Hi, Holly and Tracy, longtime listener who has listened to the entire back catalog. Love the podcast. My husband and I were listening to the episode on the Lowry War, and you mentioned in the Friday wrap-up about outdoor dramas and not being sure if there were other places other than North Carolina that have them. The answer is yes. Both my husband and I have spent much of our adult lives dabbling around the outer edges of the theatrical world, both acting and doing technical work, not professionals. We have a number of friends and colleagues who have worked for different outdoor dramas over the years. I know pre-pandemic that the Institute of Outdoor Theater was based in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and there used to be an annual gathering for actors and dancers to audition and technicians to find positions for the summer. Not sure if the Institute or annual auditions are still a going concern. There are several outdoor dramas we're aware of besides the ones you mentioned. My husband was the props master for Theater West Virginia's 1987 season, so we know about that one well. Theater West Virginia is based in Grandview National Park outside of Beckley and presents a season of three musicals each summer. Two are historical dramas about the area, and one is a Broadway musical. Honey in the Rock is the story of the founding of the state of West Virginia during the Civil War and was recently replaced by Rocket Boys, the musical. Hatfields and McCoys is based on the story of the feud between the two families. I also know of two in Ohio, Tecumseh and Trumpet in the Land. I know there's at least one in Kentucky. Thanks so much for the podcast, which I listen to when walking and when traveling for work. Keep up the great and important work of sharing stories and events so many of us know so little about. While we don't currently have pets, I do have a grandkitty, Lakshmi, and have attached photos of her. She's a rescued street cat my daughter adopted from a shelter 2 years ago, Beth. So Beth sent us just the cutest pictures that I accidentally printed out with this email. And in this first one, I will see if I can just show it to Holly. Look at this, like, this kind of grump face.
I love a grumpy face kitty. And I love that she calls them her grandkitties, because that's what my mother-in-law calls our cats.
Oh, I don't know if this kitty is really making a grumpy face, but there it's like an orange tabby. They're like an orange tabby kitty with like a little slightly downturned frowned mouth, which looks a little grumpy to me. I love it. So thank you so much for that. I think we've mentioned Tecumseh in previous listener mails about the outdoor dramas, but not the other ones that were mentioned. So thank you for that. And for that there used to be a whole institute where people would come together and audition and stuff. If you would like to write to us about this or any other podcast, we're a history podcast at iHeartRadio.com, and we're all over social media at Missed in History, which is where you'll find our Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. And you can subscribe to our show on the iHeartRadio app or wherever else you like to get your podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.